This is iUniverse Radio. iUniverse Radio is brought to you by iUniverse, the leading book marketing, editorial services, and supported self-publishing company. iUniverse Radio is produced by TogiNet Radio, on the web at toginet.com.
The title of the book, You Are Here, a novel, and the author is Chris Deliani, and Chris joins us now on iUniverse Radio. Hello, Chris.
Hey there, Steve. How are you?
Welcome to the show. Let me read a couple things you've written about your book. You say this: a young painter trying to rebuild his life in San Francisco finds himself the unlikely love object of two very different men. You also say, this is not a coming out story. Here the characters are all more or less out and have been living in the community for years. The conflict in this story comes from within the community. So before we get into details about the characters and the storyline, the plot, tell us a little bit about yourself, Chris, and why you decided to write your book.
Sure. Many years ago, I was pursuing a career in journalism. I got a journalism degree. This is in 1990. After much effort, finally got a job in the profession. Decided I didn't really care for it and that I would be happier pursuing a life writing fiction. This is all in Boston, which is where I grew up. And from there, I decided I wanted to move, just make a clean break and start all over again and move to San Francisco and devote myself to writing fiction. So this goes back 20 years now, and it's from that point that I decided I wanted to write a book like You Are Here, something like that, something where it wasn't, you know, not a coming out story, something where, you know, the community is maturing and that the conflict is all within. I was observing, it was from there my initial observations of the community and, you know, just coming out as a young man that made me inspired to write the book.
Now, your book is set immediately after the passage of Proposition 8. Why did you do that?
I didn't initially want to do that. The initial draft of the novel was actually written in the mid-90s, and then I had tried to get it published and then put it aside, and then I wanted to redo it. And when I did start redoing it, it was in 2008, and then Proposition 8 did pass, and which was, of course, a terrible disappointment at the time. And I thought, well, life has handed the community this lemon, I was going to make lemonade out of it and make fiction out of it and make it a serious plot point for one of the characters. At the time, I predicted that Proposition 8 would eventually be overturned, and I saw it as an opportunity, sort of a one-time opportunity, to create this predicament for this character at this particular moment in time, knowing that for future novels, I would not be able to have this plot point. So I really wanted to take advantage of, you know, people who voted for Proposition 8 thought they were ending gay marriage forever in California. I looked ahead and thought, no, I think it'll eventually get overturned, and I want the situation placed in the book. So that's what I did.
Tell us about Peter Bankston, the main character.
Peter Bankston is the main character, yes. So he's the young painter. He his passion for art is one that I share, and the only thing that I don't share with the character is remote ability to draw. Back in the mid-90s, I was starting, I'd taken a trip by myself to sort of clear my head to Paris, scraped together my savings and got a cheap flight over there, and went to the Louvre, and I had all the time to myself to wander the galleries and look at all the paintings, and it was from there that I sort of got that desire to write about a painter and get really fascinated about what it is that motivates painters to put paint to canvas. So that's kind of how it got started with Peter. and also his desire, part of his plot is that he wanders around Europe going to all museums and drawing and stuff, so that's how that gets about. Anyway, so he too moves to San Francisco under much more serious circumstances than I ever did. He has got a family back home, a highly dysfunctional one that he wants to get away from. He comes to San Francisco in the hope of being embraced by the community and finding a new life that way. Whether or not he does is the sort of the suspense in the novel, and as he goes along his way, finds that the people there are some are good and some are bad and some are in between, and it's up to him to figure it out. And that's the driving plot. That's the driving thrust of the story.
Well, let's take a stab at learning more about the good, the bad, and some in between. Who would you say is a great ally of Peter, of his support?
Okay, well, among his allies are he finds a friend in the character of Ben. He is something of a flighty character, kind of an airhead. Maybe he drinks too much, but basically a very good soul. In his heart. I actually had a tremendous amount of fun creating that character because he's kind of all over the place. He also finds an ally in his trainer. He gets a cheap trainer at a chain gym, and the trainer Clayton helps him out with some advice on how to navigate the community. Among the bad characters, he's got a roommate, Jeff, who is kind of a psycho, which is putting it mildly, frankly. And he meets people. He's got his first date is a guy named Don Donald. He turns out to be a disastrously bad date. I would consider him the bad. And then in between are the men that he eventually gets involved in. Those are the characters of Miles and Nick. They're both, in my opinion, both very, very good guys, but also they have their issues and their flaws, and it's up to Peter to kind of navigate all of that as he goes through the novel.
Does Peter save Nick's life?
Does he save Nick's life? Well, I'm not sure. I guess it's up to the reader to decide whether Peter saves Nick's life. It's not quite certain whether or not Nick's life is in danger during that particular chapter. But that's an interesting. That chapter is a very interesting one. What I wanted was for the first half of the novel, Peter is very much needing other people to help him out, and I knew as the novel progressed that, you know, for Peter to start to grab the notice of other characters, that he himself would actually have to start doing things. He'd have to start stepping up and doing things. And in that particular chapter with Nick, where Nick may or may not be in mortal danger, I knew I sort of threw that in. I thought, well, why don't I create a situation where Peter really does step up to the plate and does something truly heroic, and it's from there that I wrote that chapter.
So you basically formed this story around three gay men that form this unlikely love triangle?
Yes. That's sort of a classic structure, and as it progressed, it's written in the point of view of all three of the characters, each one turning off. First it's Peter's point of view is chapter one, Miles' point of view is chapter two, Nick's point of view is chapter three, and then from there proceeded to write the story, and only towards the end when the final shape finally came into my focus that I wound up with the book is a five-act play in three-chapter increments, with each of the point of view characters taking a turn, with Nick having the final turn in chapter 15, where Peter's fate at the end of the novel is told through the eyes of Nick, one of the guys that he gets involved in, and it's Nick's judgment. It's through his eyes that the reader finally gets the sense of what finally happens to Peter at the end of that book.
And your book is longer and more involved than most gay romances.
I believe that's true. I believe many gay romances tend to focus on, sort of one couple, one situation. I've not read many gay romances. I tend to focus on, when I write my own book, I actually like to go outside of myself when I read, when I do actual reading. So I actually go outside the genre. I read a lot of classic fiction, a lot of, Henry James, Jane Austen. Currently I'm reading The Adventures of Augie March by Saul Bellow. I kind of like to get outside of myself. Those books tend to be very complicated and involved, and I suppose it's because of that reading that that my own book tends to be a little bit is a little bit more complicated and involved than many.
Why the narrative voice?
Well, it's interesting. My first book I wrote completely in the first person, which frankly is so I'm just inhabiting the skin of the character, and I stayed in that character for the entire novel. And writing in the first person, I find it's just a lot easier. But for this one, I wanted to create a little bit of distance. I did want the third person. I wanted to create a little bit of distance between the reader and the characters. I wanted that for the reader's benefit, to be able to sort of stand. When you write, writing in the first person for me is where, allowing the reader to get really, really close to the character really, provides it's a great opportunity for a lot of immediacy and a lot of depth there. But in the third person, what I really want, especially in this situation where this is it's a larger story with three different points of view, I wanted to have just a little bit of a distance so that I, as an author, could, put in observations that the characters themselves might not notice. Considering that the characters all of them are flawed characters, in the sense that they're not aware of some of the things that they do, and I wanted the reader to be able to be clued in on that. So that is why I created that that narrative voice.
Why do you feel there's a definite hunger for love stories between gay guys?
It is a humongous community out there. I belong on Goodreads, which I'm a Goodreads author. There's an MM romance, or male-male romance group. That group, I think, currently consists of 11,000 members. I think that readership, I think, is underserved, certainly by the major publishers. The major publishers aren't attracting that. But the books, the books that are being out there, they're being distributed by much smaller presses, have definitely a widely read readership. So I frankly think that genre, there should be more books. There should be more attention paid to that type of genre by, I think, the major publishers. You don't see those books on the shelves in bookstores, and I think if they were, I think they'd sell.
Now, in your book, you show conflicting perspectives about the gay pride parade. Which one is yours?
Well, having just gone to the gay pride parade in 3 weeks, it's interesting. The two perspectives, it really depends on. Some years I have one perspective, and some years I have another perspective. There have been years where I thought, okay, this is old, this is tired. I mean, we're in San Francisco. There's, what really is the point? But then, what was interesting, the Pride Parade that is depicted in the book is the Pride Parade of 2009, which I went to on purpose to write for research for the book. And it was there that it really, really sank in, like, just how important that parade is, especially that particular year, because that was the year after Proposition 8 passed. So when I went to the parade, I just couldn't help but feel comforted knowing that I wasn't alone in my frustration and disappointment that that Proposition 8 passed. And then just 3 weeks when I went, Proposition 8 has since been overturned here in California, and the euphoria that is palpable was just, you know, just something I'm not sure if I'd be able to even put into words, but it was a really great day. So those are the two perspectives that have lived inside of me over the years, and that is the tension, and the tension between those two perspectives is what I wanted to portray in the book.
Chris Deliani, he is the author of his book, You Are Here, a novel. Chris, tell us how to get your book.
You can get it anywhere. You can get it on any of the online marketers. Also, it is available in your local bookstore. They will most likely not have it on the shelf, but you can go to your bookstore and just say, I want to order this book, and they will order it for you.
Well, thank you so much, Chris, for being with us on iUniverse Radio.
Thank you, Steve.